Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. And this is Bookworm. Last week, I spoke to George Saunders about his new book. It's a book about reading and writing, and inevitably being about reading and writing, it's also about life. And it's called A Swim in a Pond in the Rain, in which four Russians give us master class on writing and reading and life. Now, George, last week you were telling me that your lens had been on the technical aspects of writing. And this may well be because you went to engineering school and you like to know how things work. But I want to tell you something. I think, George, that book after book, yes, your lens has been on the technical aspect of writing, but you have been able to frame your intellect and compassion on the brokenheartedness about which these Russian writers write. And that this is not a book about the technical aspect of writing. This is a book about how writing reaches the heart and a report on what writing does to the heart as you read. And that while you might once, when I first met you, have been a far more technical writer, and sure, you were inventing all kinds of new story shapes, even new things for the human biology to do. Limbs would fall off. All kinds of extraordinary things would happen. People were living in theme parks. Everyone enjoyed these stories. But as I've watched you grow, if you'll pardon the expression, into a human being, I felt like I've been a participant in one of the most exciting writing developments of my time, and that's your work, George.
Michael, thank you. And, you know, you have been a participant because I always tell people that, you know, every time I'm on your show, I kind of get, I cry at least once, usually off the mic. But I take away something from our conversation that goes into the next work because you had this ability to tell me the truth about what you'd experienced, which hit me in a way because I kind of knew it. And then to have you articulate it made it sort of tangible. And then I could, go forth into the next work with you in my mind and my heart because you're such a beautiful, honest reader.
I think that anyone who loves to listen to Bookworm, this is the book that you should get and read. This is the book that you should give to your friends. If you want to deepen what you already love, if you love reading, George Saunders' new book, A Swim in a Pond in the Rain, is the book to read. I felt around just a little bit more than halfway through, I found it so dazzling that I started to tremble. I literally couldn't get out of bed and walk to the kitchen for a drink without shaking because the book was restoring to me what I've always believed, that what matters about writing is its meaningfulness, its ability to speak directly to the hidden aspects of our heart and mind. You say you first found it in your parents' garage. You were in a vehicle reading The Grapes of Wrath. I have to confess, I found it there for the first time too. when they finally get to, when the Joads, the Okies, finally get to California and they get to a place where they can clean themselves and have something to eat, and then they're kicked out. I was just a kid, not from a literary family, from an immigrant family. My family were all Russians and half Poles. My grandma lived with us, spoke to me in Yiddish and Russian, and reading, which she told me was what her grandparents did. They were scholars. They'd read the holy books. She told my parents, let him stay in the bedroom and read. It's the most important thing he can do. And because my grandma encouraged it, that's what I did. And you became a reader too. You didn't start out that way.
You know, in my case, I was working in the oil fields for the summer. Really hard work, you know, 13, 14-hour days in a like record heat wave. Working with a bunch of people who, you know, older than me, who'd really gotten beat up by the culture of convicts and addicts and stuff. And somehow, you know, I was sort of an Ayn Rand person at that time, as I think we've talked about. And I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't make sense of that world I was occupying in a Randian perspective. There was just no intersection, you know. So then coming back at night and reading Steinbeck and these people who had traversed the same geographic place, you know, years before, suddenly there was a connection between me and the Joads. And that was a book that really, you know, has its heart on its sleeve. It's not joking around about its intention. Its intention is to make you see capitalism, you know, and to make you feel tenderness for the people who are being stepped on by it. So, you know, years before that, I had a really powerful experience with the book Johnny Tremaine that was more of a stylistic experience. But that was where the window kind of got opened up. And
oh, I remember that. Who wrote that?
Esther Forbes. Yeah, and a nun gave it to me, and she gave it to me with a little bit of catnip. She said, this is a really hard book. You're in third grade. I'm not sure you can handle it. So, of course, then I had to read it. But what really distinguished that book was that Forbes was a real stylist. You know, she really took care of the sentences, and you could feel that on the other end. You could feel that some human being had made some pretty radical decisions. And somehow, as a young kid, I picked up on that, and I really loved that book. And, you know, that crazy thing happened where I started thinking in her diction. So I was going around school describing things in my approximation of Esther Forbes's diction, which, you know, that's an sort of an early indicator that you've got writing ahead of you, I guess.
Oh, I'm talking to George Saunders. We're talking about his new book, A Swim in a Pond in the Rain. And one of the things that I love about this book is that you reprint translations of seven Russian stories by four major Russian writers. The Russian stories in A Swim in a Pond in the Rain are three by Anton Chekhov, In the Cart, Gooseberries, and The Darling. The two by Tolstoy are Master and Man and Alyosha the Pot. One by Nikolai Gogol, The Nose, and finally one by Ivan Turgenev, The Singers. And after each story, the reader gets to read a discussion of the story, asking all sorts of questions, demanding that the story reveal what it wants to tell us about life. Now, a lot of the times, I don't know about you, but there are some very great short stories, but they're so subtle that I never knew what they were talking about until someone told me. One of the things about the Russians is that they are Russians, that they are people of spiritual intensity when you're reading their best writers, and they're saying, oh, stop thinking that this is subtle. Stop thinking. Read with your heart. Read with the part of your mind that we call the soul. But read, give the book its due. Give the story its tears. Now, you may explain the techniques of how that's done, but I think you've become much, much more, George, than a technical writer and a technical reader. I think, as you said before about listening to me, I think you like to cry.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, the interesting thing, Michael, is for me, and maybe I discovered this working on this book, but the distinction between the technical and the emotional is almost non-existent for me now. The technical is that which allows the writer access to the emotional without feeling fake, you know, without feeling sentimental or false. You know, I've been reading some books on neuroscience, and I have a feeling that this is what we're doing all the time. You know, the brain is making a prediction of what's happening. The senses are subtly adjusting that. So you might see that your brain is actually a writer. The brain is going from first draft to 15th draft based on the input of your senses. In the same way that a writer might start a story that has a certain element of condescension toward the characters. Or as my early stories did, they had a series of easy villains and then a relation to the easy villain that hopefully was somewhat interesting. But with revision, what happens is we bring the other into a sharper, more detailed view, which is absolutely an emotional journey. It's a spiritual journey to say whatever I perceive at first isn't necessarily what's actually true.
I mean, I've liked George Saunders Zafor, and I've loved George Saunders Zafor, but this book completely made me fall in love with things I thought I already loved. George's writing, the art of telling stories, and the art, more important, of letting stories live in you and become the rhythm of your heartbeat, perhaps for days, weeks, or months afterwards, sometimes years. And it's George's engineering sense that wants to ask the question, how does that happen when it happens? How does it work? How does something become utterly unforgettable? And I would say that George's answer is in the answer to the question, how do you turn compassion and understanding into technical storytelling? And as he does it in this book, because we have seven stories to work through, and you're seeing him do it again and again, it becomes less and less of a trick as a diagram, an explanation of what the heart and mind does when we as human beings read as human beings. I feel that this book, in its design and in its success, wants to make us into human beings. Not better human beings, but humaner beings. And, you know, to succeed at this is an incredible success, George.
Thank you so much, man. That means that you would say that means the world to me. I think, you know, part of it for me came out of the times also, because I wouldn't feel comfortable saying this to too many people, but I think you'll agree with me, or you'll get it. All the stuff that's going on, especially politically, for me, I can't really understand it politically, but I can understand it in terms of storytelling. So, you know, you watch those films of people storming the Capitol. To me, it just looks like a case of really bad storytelling falling on really vulnerable receivers of stories who somehow aren't that great at discerning truth from lies, which is one of the things that reading fiction will help us do. So I have a feeling that if the book is good, it's partly because I felt all this stuff, but also I really tried to enact the discipline of submerging it all within the Russians. Like, I didn't want to talk about politics or I didn't want to talk about my writing if I could help it, but just to take all of those feelings and subjugate them to these seven beautiful stories was a really lovely exercise, you know.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. This week, I'm talking with George Saunders, who's written a terrific book A swim in the pond in the rain, in which four Russians give a master class on writing, reading, and life. I think it's a book that I've been wanting to read for most of my life. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with George Saunders about his new book, A Swim in a Pond in the Rain, in which four Russians give a master class on writing, reading, and life. The book has short stories, seven of them in translation, followed by interpretation, literary criticism that explores the possibility of genuine connections between readers and writers, between writers and the world, between readers and the world. And let's face it, let's skip theory. It's been a long time that I've read criticism that teaches me why I should read, how I should read, how we can read more deeply, and how to escape from the vicissitudes of knowing theory and restore the humanness, the humanity of reading and writing. When did you become a human, George?
I'm still working on it, Michael. I'm still in progress. And I figure I've got about 20 more years if I'm lucky. You know, one of the things about this class, the way the class was actually taught, I think one of the reasons it didn't get old for me, and I hope not for the students, is that it really was different every time. And the reason it was different was that it was very Socratic in its method. You know, I would go in with a handful of, bits of shtick that I wanted to get to, and they were fully developed, but they weren't necessary. I just had them on the side. And then we'd start to talk. And the basic setup of the class is always, what did you think, students? Let's write it on the board and let's talk through these items. So every time the shape of the lecture, you know, so-called, was always different. And it always responded to the actual response that the students had on hand. So then, you know, I had the kind of technical bits developed to use as needed, but you only invoked them when they were going to be helpful, you know. So in that way, the class is always different.
I think as a writer, you've always begun with concepts like shtick. But what impresses me about you is that your work moves so far beyond shtick. I know for some reason you feel instinctively you say that you're a vaudevillian, and that may be true, but you move beyond vaudeville to the place where the jokes become sad and brokenhearted. And then, how dare the vaudeville joker try to teach us something about life? Now, I would agree with you if you told me, but Michael, we're always learning about life. You can't escape. Life is there to instruct you about life. Yes, that's true. But as a writer, you and these Russian writers are working on the art of teaching you, the characters, and their readers about what it is to be alive. Now, I don't know of anything better for literature to do. I'm talking about the process when writing stops being technical and begins the enterprise of becoming life teaching, becoming philosophy by demonstration. And you really have done it, George. I don't know of anything that has taught me so willingly. Maybe in part it's because you're embarrassed in this book about how personal and emotional you're becoming. But somehow you've really done it.
Well, thanks. You know, but I think in my mind, the development it is has been that I always was emotional and available to the world in that way. But then it's a mad dash to try to get that into your work. And so in a sense, there are technical there's also psychological obstructions in that process. So for example, at the time of Civil War Land, if I tried to get, you know, when I wrote that, we just had our daughters and we were a lot of love and a lot of revelation about how positive life could be. But when I tried to get that into a story, it just was, you know, that old thing about happiness writes white. There was no edge to it. There was nothing that a reader could grasp. So then I think it's two things. As you suggest, I think a person can actually become more human. No question about it. Which to me means opening up to what's actual. It's nothing. It's just like things are out there. You can observe them. Are you going to be in a state of denial about them or a state of acceptance about them just as they are? If the second answer is the case, then you're becoming more human. But part of that for me was to say, well, I always was human, but I just didn't know how to express it. You know, it's a technical form. So the growth such as it is feels more like saying, like in Lincoln, there's this positive experience, this positive emotion going on that I've always known about, and now suddenly I know how to say it, you know, or I know how to get it into the book without having it feel manipulative or sentimental. So it's a beautiful journey to be on, and the as I kind of talk about in the book, the most lovely part of it is that it's not done willfully, you know. For me, it's sitting down every day and doing some writing. It seems to dislodge or enable something that wanted to be asserted a long time ago, but it doesn't have to be deliberate. It's just the act of sitting down in that state of mind, which is a whole other topic, but that particular state of mind day after day is sort of almost like a guarantee of something that feels like growth. But now you got me very nervous about the next book, Michael. I have no idea what to do now.
Oh, no, don't be. You see, what I feel in this book, you explain to us that you teach at Syracuse, that each year you choose only six new writers to come into the program out of a file of applications that may number 600 or 700. These people are already among the best writers in the country to be. They've been carefully chosen, and among the people who've taught at different times at Syracuse is a famous writing program. Raymond Carver taught there. Joyce Carol Oates, if I'm not mistaken, attended there. Mary Carr teaches there. George has taught there. And the thing that he says to those already good writers is, okay, stop reading George Saunders. Stop reading the writers, your Vonneguts, your Barthelmys, and read what it was like when the short story was being discovered by a whole culture who knew that the writers in the culture were public figures who would be teaching us about morality, about spirituality, about the difference between masters and slaves, master and man, one of the stories in here. What it's like, oh my God, to be in a snowstorm, riding across the country for 50 pages of solid cold. You know, making attempts that we don't think to make because they aren't obvious story devices. They're experiences within life that remain to be decoded. And you're teaching the writers, already good writers, to decode and encode life experiences. I don't know what you're going to do in your next book, but I know, George, that you already know how to do it. Just as these writers already know how to write, you're teaching them how to write more deeply and using the Russians and the depth of spirit in Russian writing to show them that they haven't even begun to see how deeply they can penetrate to the core of being.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, that job is deceptively simple, which is just to say, whatever is bugging you in your real life or moving you or whatever your mind is actually occupied with, that has to be a valid subject for literature. And your technical discipline is simply allowing that stuff to the table. You know, so you see sometimes a writer will think, oh, I should be writing about X or Y. Which means that there's a little bit of falseness in that process because they don't know about X or Y, or worse yet, they don't really care about X or Y, but they think that's what literature should be about. The beautiful moment is when you see somebody go, oh my God, I do worry about something 24/7. I'm engaged in certain pursuits every day of my life, but I just haven't let those come to the table. And that's a lovely moment. And sometimes that just amounts to praising something. I remember there was a beautiful story by one of our students who'd come from a fairly challenging background. And it was just a very simple description of a bathroom in an extremely working class or lower class house. Something about the way the sink and the shower were serviced by the same shower head, you know, just simple. It was so beautiful. And I'd never seen anything like it in a story. And so my work that day was just to make sure that during the workshop or after, this student understood what had been accomplished by that. That's a lovely thing, you know, when something that wasn't literary is suddenly recognized as literary. And then all the stuff about emotion is actually there because that's what the person is genuinely coming from. And usually that's the person he or she is genuinely trying to deal with.
I've been talking with George Saunders, author of A Swim in a Pond in the Rain, in which four Russians give a master class on writing, reading, and life. It's published by Random House. Thank you for joining me, George.
Michael, I always love it so much, and thank you so much for reading it and for being so generous about it.
I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are each of us taping from our respective residences, so you may hear random and unusual sounds. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, which is also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It can be listened to on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. This book was a deep pleasure to me. It's one I recommend very deeply, A Swim in a Pond in the Rain by George Saunders. Special thanks to Bookworm Show collaborators Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan, engineer Desmond Taylor, and technical director PJ Shahamat. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join us again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.